and welcome to another cool episode of the Foodie Flashback, the podcast where we talk about food and food-related memories with really interesting guests. And this time around, I don't even know how to introduce you. You're basically on all podcasts in the world. Like, you and Jeff Gamet are basically doing every podcast in the world. Now you're doing as well. So you can add
We're
one.
We're very chatty people. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Well, that's one way of saying it, where you're just very, very interesting.
I would like to think it's that it's because I'm terribly interesting, but I'm not entirely convinced that's the case.
Yeah. Anyway, Caligamont, everybody, like, at least in the tech or comparable or like some side areas, like, everybody knows you basically.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly like Apple podcasting folks, because I've been there a really long time. So
very long time. That helps. Like, I do remember you from the early like Tua talk cast times.
Tua talk cast. Yeah, it's been a good time over there.
I think I talked to Mike about that. That it's still around or something like that. Like, at least.
Yeah, I think it's still featured. Show on the front page of like talkshoe.com or something. Yeah. Like, it's like spotlight podcast or something, and the Tua Talk cast is there, which hasn't had an episode in
5 years, I don't know how many hundreds of years now.
And even then there was one, because we were like, we should bring this back. Like, let's dust off all the equipment and see if it all works. And then we did that for a couple of hours and we just kind of gave up. That was it. So,
yeah, it's always fun.
You see a lot of fun.
It is. But I mean, we talked a little bit in the pre-show about that as well. You're doing a lot of tech shows. You're doing some, I would say, not particularly tech shows, but like tech adjacent shows, maybe on the Comparable, especially.
Yeah, the incomparable ones are fun, particularly I've done a couple of game show episodes. Ooh. So those are always fun. There's what we like to call feuding families, the legally distinct version of another show that may sound familiar to you, where you get asked questions. So the Incomparable is a membership powered network of podcasts. And so one of the things you get to do as members is surveys will go out occasionally, like, answer these questions about Star Trek or answer these questions about Star Wars. And it'll be a whole bunch of questions, but the whole point is not to get it accurately. And if you don't know anything about Star Wars or Star Trek or James Bond or whatever, like, that's a good, like, you are especially encouraged to fill out the survey. So, you know, like, five things you would find on an Imperial starship, you know, or whatever. And so things like that. We make a podcast out of that. There's one that I'm not on, but I know a lot of people really love, which is Total Party Kill. And it's a D&D podcast. So people play D&D as this live stream thing that you can get access to, which is super fun. And there's a couple other ones, like Low Definition is one that's a lot of like Define This Word, or the one I still remember. It's been years since we played it, but the one I remember was Cheese or Polearm, I think it was. And you had to decide if the word was a variety of cheese or some sort of weaponry. And it was delightful. And I don't put any of those together. I just get to like show up and sort of entertain everyone else with my assessment of the answer. But those are always a really, really good time. I admire the amount of prep work that has to go into something like that. But those are I do enjoy those. And then occasionally I'll be on something else talking about like a new TV show or a movie or something that came out recently. And I have my own show over there, plug, called I Want My MCU TV, where we talk about the latest Marvel Universe television program. So
really good.
We're up to our eyeballs in Loki right now.
A lot of fun. Yes, you should be. Yeah. But now you can add the food, like a food podcast to your, to your list as well. So that's why you're here. I usually like to ask at the beginning, two most important questions. What is your definition of a foodie? And do you consider yourself one?
So I live in a town where food is a very big deal. Mm-hmm. I live in Portland, Oregon, and we take food seriously, very seriously. However seriously you take it where you live, we take it more seriously than that. Like, for being Portland, which is all like weird and cutesy and fun and like kind of has this reputation, like, aside from like none of that matters when it comes to food. So I feel like, no, I'm not, because I know what kind of level, like I know what level everyone else is at out there in Portland. Okay. So I would say I am not, but I would say the definition is, someone who's enthusiastic about it. Like if you're, it's like being a fan of Star Wars or a fan of Harry Potter or a fan of, you know, anything else or something that you sort of take on as a hobby, like something that you're very enthusiastic about that you enjoy, whether it's cooking or whether it's trying new things and like learning more about other cultures and like cultures through their food. Like if you like any of those particular pieces of it, like there's a lot of ways to sort of be enthusiastic about food and about eating. And so I would say like that's sort of the definition is like if it if it's more to you than just sustenance, then it's entirely possible you're a foodie. I say I am not because, like I said, like it's a whole nother level here in Portland. So, I enjoy going and enjoying the fruits of other of other foodies' labors.
Okay,
because we have a lot of amazing restaurants here, and like that's a thing. I actually I do have a friend who I do think of as a very high level foodie. Hi, Charles. And that basically used to be the thing that we would do is we would go find a place like this place is new or that chef has a pop-up this thing or there's you know a new restaurant has opened in the place where that one was that we used to like to go, so let's see what the new place is like and things like that. And so we would just go like a couple times a week we would go out and have something fun somewhere and new. And it was a lot of fun. And we haven't had a lot of that lately. So we're trying to get back to that.
So by Portland standards,
it'll be fun.
By Portland standards, you're not a foodie. If you like left Portland out and said like just
I would
based
say,
on
yeah,
your definition.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I enjoy it and I'm curious about like the culture and that goes into it and that sort of thing. You know, like how a thing, you know, things like how like every culture has some sort of noodle that they make. And I, like I'm fascinated by things like that. I like Good Eats a lot. And what I liked about it was when they would have the cultural anthropologist on and talk about like the evolution of like we all know tacos taste great, but here's like how they came to be, you know, and things like that. And so like that piece of it is the part that I just thought was interesting. So. I'm just kind of all around nerdy that way. Like the other piece of it is a part I think is fun. So
is that Charles that you mentioned, by the way, Charles Akimoto?
Charles Akimoto, yes.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's like I follow him on Instagram and I get to see all the food. So
yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. I'm party to some of that. So, not anymore, but like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now. they would bring food to the table and set it all on the table and we'd be silent for about 30 to 60 seconds of like, let me see if I can get a shot. Okay. I've got a picture now. Charles, did you get a picture?
Okay.
Oh no. The light from over there is weird. Give me your phone. Okay. I got it. Here you go. Now we can eat. Like there's always like this little pause when something would come out and it was always funny. So. Okay.
Funny thing. I'm the opposite. I always forget to take the photos. Like it's rare. Like usually you get it, maybe halfway through it or at the end, like the empty plate.
Oh yeah. I definitely have some aftermath photos as well because we have gone and been like, that looks amazing, you know, or been like super duper hungry and like really looking forward to whatever it was and then end up like, oh, well, yeah.
Oh, that's that.
Yeah. No, there's not a bite missing, but here you go. Here's the picture.
Yeah. I've done that so many times or completely forgotten. So there's that. I want to start at the very beginning with you. Like what is the earliest memory you have like food wise? Your grandma or your family cooked maybe.
Yeah. Well, my grandparents, particularly on my dad's side, my grandmother and her sister were very close. They lived in the same place. And so, I would see them regularly because they lived in the same city as my dad. And so I would see them a lot and they were sort of old school, very much that generation of we do a lot of canning as a matter of course, not like it's a special thing, but they grew up on farms, like actual farming where, you know, all of the women got up half an hour before the men, made massive breakfasts, sent them all off out in the fields. And as soon as all the guys left, you know, got everything ready to make lunch and then got everything ready to make dinner and did mm-hmm. all the like canning and preserving and made all the jam and, you know, like, you know, everything from scratch, very, mm-hmm. you know, the most basic
traditional
things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of my earliest food memories is more, food adjacent, I guess, because I was a pretty active kid and I, mm-hmm. it was very easy for me to, cause a lot of mayhem for adults.
No.
Cause everyone, I know that's surprising. People like, it was like people would forget that I was only this tall, mm-hmm. but I could reach things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yeah, apparently there was sort of a wave of destruction for a while before everybody figured out like, this is how tall she actually is. Let's put everything 6 inches higher, mm-hmm. you know? Which still happens to this day, honestly. It's not fair.
Okay.
But it was that my grandmother wanted to keep an eye on me, mm-hmm. my great grandmother. And so she would sit me on this little stool in her kitchen. And it was a very small kitchen, but she would sit me on this stool and I would read cookbooks to her. I was about 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And she would just open the cookbook to whatever and tell me that I was helping her. Mm-hmm. I realized many years later when my dad was relating this story to someone else that I actually wasn't, that there was no relation to what I was reading her and what she was making. Like she's making pie and mm-hmm. I'm reading her pot roast, you know, or whatever. But she would just have this, she would like, if I sat in the kitchen and read a book, she always mm-hmm. knew where I was and she always knew what I was doing. And I wasn't doing anything that was going to end up causing her grief and heartache later. So.
Yeah, and she probably didn't need the recipe anyway. Like.
Yeah, and she was not that person. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a cookbook. I have two of her cookbooks that she made nice. That are these little like mm-hmm. binder sort of book, and they say like mm-hmm. recipes on them and from like the late 60s. Yep. And she made one for each of her daughters. She had 3 daughters. Mm-hmm. And there's one daughter, I don't have hers, but I have my grandmother's and I have my great aunt's mm-hmm. Of the ones that my great grandmother made for them. And so they're handwritten in sort mm-hmm. of that very old style, very kind typical, of tall, spiky yeah. handwriting mm-hmm. and call for things like lard and you know, all kinds of like really interesting sorts mm-hmm. of ingredients. So I have a couple of her cookbooks with some That's stuff nice. In them that like, and like mince meat that mm-hmm. she made from scratch, you know, to make mince meat pie mm-hmm. and things like this. So I have those sort of like old school recipes. Yeah. I think I've made almost all, like all of the ones that are sort of reasonable things to eat today. I've made all of those at least once. Mm-hmm. So on my own and I've used like the barbecue sauce recipe a couple of times mm-hmm. and some different things. So yeah, because they were very much a like make it all yourself kind of a thing. So that's probably one of my earliest is mm-hmm. reading recipes to my great grandmother because mm-hmm. I was helping her cook, mm-hmm. you know. But I when I was doing that, I never put together that like what I was reading her had absolutely no impact on what it was that she was doing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you were having fun and as you said, like you yeah. weren't doing anything else.
So. I was helping. It was great. Yeah. You know, yeah. I was doing all kinds of great stuff.
Did you?
But mm-hmm. she also made a lot of pie. And so mm-hmm. that's one thing that I definitely remember is specifically gooseberry pie because gooseberries mm. are native to Oregon. Mm-hmm. And so I remember eating that a lot as a kid, like the pie that she would make. Cause she was also the one that was in charge of like having family reunions. Mm-hmm. And we had a whole lot of family in that area in Eastern Oregon. And so we would all get together and I remember eating a lot of pie that, my great grandmother made and that my grandmother and great aunt made. Mm-hmm. That's kind of one of the things that I remember being a kid.
Did you like later on when you were a little bit like bigger, did you start cooking with her really? Or like, was it always like, keeping you out of trouble?
No, like she would let me sort of, not quite sous chef, mm-hmm. but she would let me measure stuff. Like mm-hmm. I need this, you know, she would point at she would actually lay the recipe out, the one she was using. And she would say, I need the flour for this, mm-hmm. or I need the sugar for this. And then I would go get it and come, you know, go mm-hmm. over there and get it and come back. You know, here's the 2 cups in the 2 cup thing. And so she spent some time teaching me about like the different measuring cups, like there's wet versus, you know, wet mm-hmm. ones and dry ones and how you don't measure them the same. And and just some of the real, real basic stuff that comes with cooking, and like, you know, follow the recipe a couple of times, but then like figure it out for yourself after that. Like, you know, if it's a thing with raisins in it, you don't have to put the raisins in it. Like, she was the one that sort of taught me that recipes are not absolute, I guess, which is a thing that, I think that's just sort of a general approach that has served me very well in a lot of ways. Just in technology, it's the same sort of thing. A lot of times it's just a guide and not necessarily the law.
It's an idea. Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, you meet, like, in the podcast, we've had like people on that are very scientific, where it's like, okay, it's the recipe and you follow it to the letter. And if it says like it's 50 grams, then it's exactly 50 grams and not 51 or 49, like it's exactly 50. And then there are people like you and me who are like, well, it's a guidance. Like, if it's 52,
I got the butter. That's the part that mattered, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, exactly.
Well, I know, like, with certain things, when there's a little more exact science involved, like, there's times you have to be a little more precise about it.
Yeah.
You know,
baking,
if you're making
especially.
Pastry stuff, if you're making pastry shells or something, like, this needs to be cold and that needs to be warm, and you have to do it this way, and you know, and it does have to be a little more precise because there's not as much wiggle room. But you know, if you're just making a cake. Mm-hmm. Or you're making some biscuits or something and you throw a little flour on the counter and it's not exactly 2 cups, it's fine, you know, that sort of thing. So, but it was sort of learning, like, being able to understand like what was happening in the recipe to know, like, yeah, I have to, you know, I do have to follow this because there does have to be exactly 50 grams. Mm-hmm. But then also, like, you know, if it has raisins and you morally oppose them in food, like I do, you can just skip that and it's probably okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
And like figuring out the difference between those things.
Yeah. Also figuring out substitutions. Like, if you didn't have something, I mean, I'm guessing, especially on the farm, like, it wasn't like there was no Walmart you could go to, at least not as easily at least to like buy whatever you wanted nowadays. As it is nowadays. So you had to kind of be creative as well and say, okay, like, I want to make this, but I don't have that. So what can I do? Like, what, I don't know, what fruits are available right now?
Yeah, and that's where the canning came from too, was because everything was basically 100% seasonal at that point. Like, if you wanted strawberries and it wasn't June or July, you were out of luck. Unless maybe you canned some or you made some jam or something last year and you could, my great grandmother didn't have one that I remember because she was sort of living in an apartment building at that point. But in her own house and in my great aunt's house, there was like the fruit cellar where I've canned everything and now it lives down here on a shelf. And so I know, like, the fruit's over on the left and the vegetable stuff's over on the right. And, like, you know,
don't
sauce and minced meat and things like that, like, that's on the back wall. And so like, here's, you know, if you needed something, like, oh, we're out of peaches, go downstairs, get another jar of peaches, come upstairs and move on with your life. Like, but that was the only way that they could do that sort of in the off season for a lot of that stuff. So, and that was just a habit that continued until they passed.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's, it is interesting that I think that's something that got lost a little bit, at least. I mean, it's still happening. I mean, my mom is still doing it, for example, but I think it's like getting less and less from generation to generation.
Like, it is. And I think part of what's sort of disappointing about that is that it's not like I had built it up into some sort of high powered operation and like in my mind, but it's just because everybody got together. But half of why everybody got together was the social piece of it. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really have anything to do with it being complicated or anything. Yeah. But you know, if you're going to do that, like, if you're going to get into canning, then doing a little bit more so that you have some and this other person and this other person, like, you know, adding a little, like, adding to it to scale, like, is a very easy thing to do. So, you know, they used to get together. So in my mind, when I was a kid and they would all get together and you know, do the canning for whatever it was, it always seemed like a very big deal. And it actually isn't.
No.
As I discovered, because we moved into a house where we have a massive backyard and I have this whole area where I can plant things. So a couple of years, I had the Farmer Kelly hashtag over on Instagram where I would plant stuff. And so I made, like, and I planted like 2 or 3 cucumber plants because I was like, well, I don't know if they're going to all work. And then they all took off and they were all super happy to keep making cucumbers. I was like, I don't have it. I don't know what to do with all these. And so my friend came over and was like, my mom and I made pickles all the time. And so I can help. And so came over, we made pickles. They were amazing. It was really not as hard as I thought it was going to be. Like the only like complicated piece was putting the, once you had the jar all put together and you closed it up, you had to put it in the boiling water to seal the top and then take it out again. That was like the hardest part. The rest of it was very easy. And so, and we had a blast doing that. And
very easy.
The pickles were great.
Very easy, but also I think a little bit boring. And so like, I mean, that's at least something I remember. I remember doing that with my grandma, like it's like green beans and like, I don't know, cherries and stuff. Like I always thought like, cleaning it all and preparing it all was very boring because it's a repetitive task and you're doing that for hours and hours. So having people with you there that can help you with it and make
gossip.
It, yeah, exactly. That makes it work. And I think that's probably a big part of it. I mean,
I think that was the rest of it was just, you know, also, like another opportunity to get together, but also sort of have something to show for that time. And not just like, you know, now I've got the scoop on everybody, but also like I also came home with all these pickles or all these green beans or or whatever. And then having that later, like, you know, every time I opened one of those, it was sort of a nice memory of that weekend that my friend and I got together and like canned the crap out of all those cucumbers. And like, you know, every time I opened a new jar, I was like, oh yeah, we did these, you know, I did that. Like I grew them all in the yard, like right over there and brought them all in the house. And now, and you know, it's that same sort of thing that you hear, like the worst tomato off the plant that you grew tastes better than the best tomato from the store, kind of a thing.
Does.
Like it was the same sort of deal. Like it,
it absolutely does. Yeah. And I think it's, I just remembered something. A friend of mine, like she's like her family's Mexican. They spent 12 hours making tamales with like six, seven like women together. They gossip, they drink, like it's a Saturday for them. They have fun. Yeah. It's the same thing. Like it's making tamales, not very interesting. It just takes forever. It's a lot, especially if you're doing it at volume. But like they just have fun.
I've been party to the, I have been a person at a tamale party and like, wow, that's really something.
It is.
And then when you're done, you have all those delicious tamales. That's just sort of a bonus.
Exactly. It's kind of, Yeah. I got a couple of the ones she made and like, they're really good. I miss that. So like you started cooking as you said, or like helping a little bit with your great grandma. How did that evolve? Like did you start cooking like with your family as well at home, or was it more you, like who was cooking at home?
Well, it depends. Like my parents split up when I was a kid, when I was very young. So my mom was a single mom for a while. And so we, you know, and so there was a whole stretch of sort of, you know, ramen and SpaghettiOs and things like that. And, you know, we would eat and stuff, but my mom was working and then would come home and my brother and I were still really young. So it wasn't like we could, you know, sit home and she could go do whatever it was she needed, you know, like lots of shopping or lots of planning or anything like that. Like she always had something else going on. So,
I mean, single mom.
So like, I don't remember a whole lot of that, but then I remember when my mom got remarried, my stepdad would sort of tease us and about like how we didn't have very educated palates basically. And so he tried a couple times to make us stuff. And then, so like he tried mac and cheese from scratch, but then, it really went badly.
Oh no.
And it was horrifying. Like all the cheese separated and stuck to the bottom of the pan. And like my brother and I are like, you know, and my mom now, of course, has put the fear of mom into us. And like, whatever he makes, you will eat it and you will like it and you will tell him it's delicious. And so this was all he had. Like, he didn't have a plan B and the mac and cheese turned against him. So he comes out and gives it to us and it's horrible. And so and we're like, that was good. Thank you for dinner. You know, because we're little kid, you know, because like what, you know. I'm not supposed to lie to people, but I also know what my mom will do if I don't tell him it was delicious, because that's what she said to do. So I told her, I told him it was delicious. And on the way home, we told her all about it. And I told her that I told him it was good. And now I feel bad. You know, and then like later he told my mom, this was like his first sort of solo outing with the two of us. And he made this horrible, horrible, horrible mac and cheese. And I remember he said he couldn't believe that we thought it was good. And so he was even more confused. He's like, I served them this awful mac and cheese and they told me it was great. And I didn't understand. It's like, I was really worried that they did, that they were being honest with me. And then I was like, even more worried that they thought that would pass for food, you know, basically.
Okay.
But he's always, but he was always a person that would try something new or, you know, as stuff got really trendy and like everybody started serving some particular side dish or whatever, you know, if we would go out to eat, he would order it and he would always try new things. And that was sort of a thing that he kind of instilled in us, was like, you know, you should really try everything once just to see, because what if it's really good and you miss out, you know, for all that time on something that you don't like. My mom's palate is pretty limited. Like my mom does not enjoy garlic. Which I don't get. She morally opposes her steak having any pink in it whatsoever. Like that's just sort of how she rolls, and that's fine. But she will say things like, you know, we'll get together and my husband, Mr. Kelly, he adores garlic. And so at one point, like, we got together for something and we were making mashed potatoes. My mom said something like, don't put too much garlic in those mashed potatoes. And he looked at me and said, I understand all the words in that sentence, but I don't understand that sentence.
Yeah,
she doesn't. And I'm like, it's fine. I'm adopted. Like, you know, she doesn't enjoy garlic. It'll be okay. You know, but so like, it was sort of odd in our house for my stepdad to be like, yeah, try everything. And, you know, it doesn't, you know, it might be weird, but it might be great, you know, was sort of his attitude, which is the part that I've sort of adopted. And my mom does try some stuff. Like, they go on trips around the world. Like, they go to all different kinds of places and they take those like massive trips, you know, where they're gone for like a month and they take a cruise that goes and stops in like five or six different countries in Europe, or they go all over Asia and come back. So they've done like a bunch of those. And so she has tried more things and some more interesting things over time. But like when we were kids, it was it was a pretty limited selection for the most part. So it was nice to sort of get out in the world and try, you know, new things and interesting things. And that's part of what I like about living here, is getting the opportunity to sample a lot of other kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Also a lot available in Oregon in general. When you mentioned garlic.
Yeah, living in rural Oregon, the options are pretty limited anyway, even if you want to like, if you want to go out to dinner, like maybe there's a Mexican place, there might be another Mexican place, and then there's a Chinese food place, and those are your options. Like everywhere I lived, like there was one Mexican place for sure, one Chinese place for sure, maybe something else,
maybe pizza. You know,
and then sort of like your casual dining, like it wouldn't have been, because they weren't national then, but something like an Applebee's, where like it is a restaurant. And, you know, but there's a lot of them, and and it's not necessarily like we're going out for a special occasion, but we're going to go have dinner, you know, that kind of place. So, you know, there would be like one or two of those, and, you know, and that even wasn't where I lived. Like that'd be half an hour away if we were headed into town, you know, for something. We could go there and have something to eat. So,
Yeah. I mean, also at that time, that wasn't too common. I mean, nowadays, like there are a million options and chains and like everything.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, at that time, that just wasn't there yet. Like growing, but
it wasn't
there.
A thing people did. Yeah. And the palate was pretty limited too. Like you could have a hamburger or cheeseburger, and that might be, you know, the bulk of your options depending where you were. There was always like a pretty good Mexican place that was pretty legit. So I grew up eating a lot of legit Mexican food, and a white person had a taco once and decided to go start a taco restaurant. But like, you know, this is somebody who like, this was, you know, the people that make tamales, like this is my grandmother's recipe. And now I'm using it, and I make, you know, I make tacos here. I make Mexican food, you know, using my family's cookbook sort of thing, and have really good Mexican food. So we do a lot of that.
There's something, I don't know who told me that. There's nothing wrong with one clove of garlic that three cloves of garlic cannot make better.
Oh, I like that. Like,
yeah. And every time I do anything with garlic, I remember that. I'm like, yeah, more is better in this case. Like, just add more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so you start, I mean, doesn't sound like, yeah, no, not much cooking. Did you cook with your stepdad? Because you mentioned that he was experimenting.
Not really. I just did a lot of encouraging. Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds good. Let's try that. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of just sort of like, we could, yeah, you know, that's not? A thing I would try. Mm-hmm. You know, because it sort of became a joke in our family, you know, like, well, that depends. Like, if it turns out like the mac and cheese, then no. You know, like, we would, that was kind of always the punchline, was like, oh, that depends. Are you better at making that than you are at mac and cheese? Ha ha. You know?
Yeah. So, I bet he really enjoyed that.
Well, we tried not to bring it up very often, but yeah. And then my dad was a pretty limited cook. Mm-hmm. But it was always like we would spend time with him and sometimes get to go out to eat because it was just easier for him because he didn't have to cook for us. Yeah. So, you know, we could have whatever we wanted. And so a lot of times, like if we were spending time with him, it'd be pretty low key. And so it'd be another like casual kind of place or like, let's go get happy meals. Cause you know, that's great when you're like in grade school and you know, there's a treat at the end. Like that's awesome. So we would do that sometimes too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really till much later that I sort of got to like try more stuff that was kind of interesting and different, like on a larger scale. And part of that is just as it got more important to kind of society as a whole that like food tastes good and be interesting and be sort of something that you could sit and enjoy. And like eating a meal could be an event. Like if you had nice food, you know, if you were eating something really nice, like, and then, so yeah, I like that sort of evolved over time. Means I'm really not fussy. Like when we're done here and it's dinner time, like I could go and I could have a really nice meal somewhere, but I could also like go upstairs and I don't have any, but like I could go upstairs and make a box of Hamburger Helper and be happy with that too. Like I don't really have any sort of hangups about like, that's not, you know, about like being snobby about food. Cause I know there's kind of a lot of people that do that, you know, and I'm super not that person.
Yeah. How did you get into that then? I mean, you had the basis from like your great grandma said your parents cook too much. Like, how did you get into it? Like, that's really curious.
A lot of it is just because I sort of had that, because I got that approach of like, you should try it because it might be good. And then mostly it was just sort of moving to Portland, which is a larger place where you had more options. Like, you know, you could get Thai food here. And, you know, did you know that Indonesian food is a different thing and like Indian food is a different thing. And there were a lot of different other, like there were, even before Portland was sort of known with this foodie reputation, Portland had by virtue of being a populated city, it had a lot more options and a lot more restaurants and things that you could try and a lot more things in the grocery store, like in the sort of foreign food section or whatever. You could always find something. You could find something interesting there, and like Asian supermarkets, which have been here way longer than I've been here. And, you know, getting to go to the Asian supermarket and walk down the aisle of ramen and, you know, find really interesting ramen flavors or find instant noodle packets that are made with rice noodles instead of flour noodles. And like, I like those better. So like, I always have, you know, three or four of those in a drawer upstairs for like, I have to eat something and I don't know what, and I don't really care what it is. I'll eat a 50 cent rice noodle packet and it'll be fine. You know? Yeah. So I mean, those sorts of things were just sort of options that weren't available. You know, where I lived. And then so when I moved to where they were, like I started taking advantage of them.
And I mean, as you said, like with that that mindset of, okay, like looking for the interesting things and trying them at least once, that's the perfect approach. And like you move to a place where there are more options and you try them all. You're not like, okay, I don't know that, so I'm not going to try it.
Yeah, maybe it's good. It might be fun. Yeah. You know, you don't know. And like, you know, if if it's some sort of spectacular failure, you know, you might get a good story out of it.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, that, like,
like the
that
mac and cheese story.
Ted Lasso, when they go to the Indian restaurant, that's dear to my heart, because that's the sort of experience that could go, that, you know, could go horribly wrong. And you know, but, you know, but he went and tried it anyway, you know, and that's sort of the, I know that's not the takeaway most people got from that, but it was a thing that was very familiar to me, of like, I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, I've been there. But I'm still curious, like, how, like, how did you really pick up cooking? Because, I mean, one part is eating out, but I mean, you also somehow got into cooking, and like, where did you get
I do cook some, and but I do, like, particularly, like, in the summer and stuff, it's pretty low key, because, like, it's hot and I don't want to I don't want to turn on the oven or anything. So, like, in the summer, we do a lot of, like, grilling outside, and that tends to be Mr. Kelly's department. I don't know how he manages, but he makes the greatest steak, and, like, just take it out on the barbecue. I don't know what, there's, like, salt and pepper, maybe some oil, and then puts it on the grill, and it's always amazing. And I don't know how he manages that, but, like, I've had steaks in restaurants that didn't taste as good as ones off my barbecue.
Oh, that's sad.
I was sad about them too.
Yeah, that's always, like, that's one thing. Like, when I go to a restaurant, it has to be better than what I would have cooked. And if it's not, then I'm super disappointed.
And like, especially because, like, I don't necessarily pride myself on my cooking skills. So if I go out and I'm like, I could have made something at home that would have been more enjoyable to eat than this, like, that feels sort of extra disappointing. Aside from like, it wasn't very good, but, like, I myself could have done better, and I'm not necessarily renowned for my cooking skills. I do like baking. Like, I will make, like, cakes and cookies and things like that. I don't have a lot of faith in my pie skills, because I'm not very good at crust. I think I'm intimidated by it, sort of like bread. Like, I get in my head about it a lot. Like, if it's not exact, then, you know, everything's taken a terrible turn. Sometimes I don't feel like I'm kind of up for that challenge. But, like, I've made, like, lots of cakes and lots of pies and lots of side dish sorts of things.
So, what's one of your, or, like, what kind of cakes have you made, or what do you remember, like, making?
I've upside down cake, pineapple upside down cake. That's one that I make. I make more of that than I used to, because that's Mr. Kelly's favorite. And so I make those. Because I have, like, sort of this sort of secret recipe that I use for them. And we went somewhere one time that had, like, individual dessert. We went grocery shopping at a different grocery store or something. And they had, like, individual desserts where you could buy, like, one piece of cake, you know, or something like that. And he bought this pineapple upside down cake, this piece of pineapple upside down cake in this little, like, individual container. And we got home and he took a bite of it and he looked at me and he said, "This isn't anywhere near as good as yours." And I'm like, "That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me." It's really funny.
That's so cute.
But I really like, I like doing sort of stuff like that. It kind of has to have a reason though. Like, I wouldn't bother with pineapple upside down cake for just me. But, like, doing it for him, like, for his birthday or something, like, it feels like it's worth it. Or, you know, if it's somebody's birthday or there's a special occasion, you know, everybody's getting together for something I want to contribute, like, then I'll do stuff for something like that, so that it's a little more meaningful, I guess, because that's sort of part of, you know, what goes along with it is, like, you know, kind of getting to share that the experience of eating it also. You know, is kind of goes along with that. So, like, there's family recipes, like, you know, it's not officially a family gathering unless you have, you know, this casserole or this, you know, these particular green beans or whatever, you know, and I have, like, stuff like that that I do, you know, for when folks get together for stuff.
That's something I've missed here. I usually get, especially on a weekend, I get some kind of, I don't know, craving or something. But it's not craving for eating something. It's about baking. And I'll just bake a random cake and then take it to the office on Monday so someone can eat. Because I don't care about cake. Like, I don't want to eat it. I just want to bake it.
Yeah.
It's really weird. But, like, the people in my office were always very happy. Like,
Yeah, I've done that too. Like, here.
Yeah.
Like,
I would come in on a Monday and I'm like, I was bored yesterday, so I made cake. And they're like, cool. What is it today? Like, what did you make? It's like, oh, I made lemon bars or like, I don't know, Texas sheet cake or whatever. Like,
yeah. Well, because that's part of the fun of it is getting to make it. And then like, yeah, it's not like you necessarily want to eat any, but getting to share it with other people is the part of it that you like. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, the social part of it.
That's and I think that matters. I think that's always been a piece of it, you know, particularly with like, you know, if you talk to anybody who their family get together a lot, there was the stuff that they ate all the time. There was always, you know, Aunt Nancy always brought whatever that thing was. You know, she had that amazing baked bean recipe or, you know, somebody that did barbecue chicken or, you know, whatever it was. Like, there's always stuff like that. That's like almost everyone I know that if their family got together regularly, they all have sort of that recipe that comes from that.
Yeah, I think that's quite common. Like, I was just thinking, like my family, even like there were certain things that we frequently did when family got together. Mm-hmm. Just party favorites. I mean, I had to bring tiramisu to almost every party. I don't know why, but there was a phase like in high school where senior year high school where basically every party I went to, they always asked for tiramisu. I don't know why. Like, it had a lot of alcohol. Maybe it's because you're
the only person that had the patience to make it.
Yeah,
and everybody thought it was good.
Yeah. It also had a lot of alcohol in it, so maybe that helped.
That's true, it does. It never hurts.
No. But yeah. So
there is a non-zero amount of rum in my pineapple upside down cake recipe, just for the record.
That makes now it sounds even better. I will have to try that at some point.
Yes. Next time you're here.
I will do
make
that.
It happen.
I will make that happen. Yeah. So, I mean, baking, like, I want to get a little bit deeper in, like, what do you like? I mean, we talked about, like, what Mr. Kelly likes, like, and what he does.
Well,
but what do you enjoy?
For myself, like, it sort of depends. Like, my go-tos for myself, like, I will probably eat a sandwich. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, depending on what I can put on it. Because there's kind of always bread and there's kind of always something to go on it, whether it's maybe it's a peanut butter sandwich, maybe it's a turkey sandwich. I have pastrami right now. Like, when we're done, I'm probably going to go eat a pastrami sandwich. Just different things like that. And it depends on like a lot of things. Like, if I'm going through a phase of like having to do something in particular, I don't remember. Oh, there's a meat market not too far from my house, and they were doing like they make their own pastrami in house, and so I would buy that and try and find other ways that I could eat it because it was super delicious. But I didn't always just want it on a sandwich, so I would start like chopping it up and having it with hash brown potatoes, and just start having like pastrami hash. Eating that, like throw an onion in there and go to town. So I did that. I did that for a while, and then I got really bored of it, and so I didn't do it anymore.
It's really funny.
Occasionally,
I do that too. Like, I go through phases where like I make something and I make something like, I don't know, 15, 20 times, and then I'm bored. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, next. Like,
Well, and I think part of it was like the prep was sort of done. Like, I knew I had hash browns. I knew I had pastrami. I know I had onions. Mm-hmm. And so like if I stand there for 15 minutes and chop stuff and throw it all in a pan, like it's basically two steps. Chop everything, cook everything. Now you can eat it. Mm-hmm. So I definitely like stuff like that. Like I said before, I'm not a super fussy, hung up on, you know, what it is. And of course I should be because I live here. So, you know, but I don't care if it came from a can. It doesn't need to be free range. It doesn't need to be I don't need to know the name of the cow to enjoy a hamburger, like that kind of thing.
No.
I mean, sometimes it helps.
Yeah. Maybe it was a nice cow. I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure he was lovely. I'm sure it was a lovely cow. But like generally, like for myself, like right now is weird because I really don't want to cook anything. Mm-hmm. So it's very much like
summer.
I'm also that person that like I had potato salad for dinner. You know, like there was some in the fridge and so I ate it and I moved, you know, and I wasn't hungry anymore and I moved on with my day. Yeah. But like in the winter and stuff, I'm definitely a person who will make like the big batch, mm-hmm. and then maybe freeze part of it. Mm-hmm. But maybe I just eat the same leftovers a couple, 3 nights in a row. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of it. Tuna casserole is a good one for that. I definitely make a lot of tuna casserole because I like it. And it's pretty straightforward and it's pretty forgiving. It's mm-hmm. like, I mean, it's casserole. Like every casserole is pretty forgiving. The whole point of exactly. it is just sort of like, what do you have? Like, mm-hmm. I don't have peas this time. I have edamame. Well, today we're having tuna casserole with edamame in it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have celery? No. Well, that's a bummer. What else you got? I got peas. They're green. Yeah. It counts. Huck them in, you know. Mm-hmm. So like, and I think that's part of where that framework comes from, because like because otherwise I would look at that recipe for tuna casserole and be like, I can't make tuna casserole. Mm-hmm. I don't have the veggie, the veggie piece that you say should be mm-hmm. in here. Well, it just needs something. Mm-hmm. So put something in there and it's fine.
Yeah.
And sort of learning where the wiggle room was in some of that stuff, I think helps a lot with like being able to improvise.
Yeah. The experimental approach to it, like just trying it. I mean, like making the recipe like once or twice or three times and then saying, okay, like now I know it. And now I can change it. I can substitute. I can replay. Like I can just add things, whatever I want to do. And I think
And a lot of things come in like basic units mm-hmm. too. So like, you know, one bag of noodles, two cans of soup, two cans of tuna, mm-hmm. off to the races, you mm-hmm. know, whatever. And being able to like, if you can start there, then just sort of go like, and then additionally, whatever else you want to add, it's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing, I think makes a difference. We have an Instant Pot. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. That gets used for a fair amount of stuff. Mm-hmm. Mr. Kelly makes a lot of food in it. I make, he has this pork loin recipe that's mm-hmm. out of this world. I don't know what it is. He won't tell me. But he did that. Like he went online and got a bunch of recipes and like kind of averaged them all and mm-hmm. came up with like his own, mm-hmm. but he will not share it with me. Mm-hmm. And makes it that way. And it's really delicious. So like those out of there, I make a lot of steel cut oatmeal mm-hmm. out of in the Instant Pot. And I like making that great big batch. And then, I can dish it out into little containers mm-hmm. and then throw one in the microwave in the morning. And I have instant steel cut oats. And that's amazing.
That's pretty smart because I mean, it's not a lot of work to make the big batch, and then you don't have to deal with it for a little while. Like it's done.
Yeah, it's another one of those scale mm-hmm. situations. Like if I can make enough, if I'm motivated enough to make breakfast for tomorrow, like mm-hmm. I can make breakfast for a week mm-hmm. if I do it. You know, if I get after it, and that I think that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And I also like, the lack of decision fatigue, mm-hmm. like in the morning, like I can open the refrigerator and there's an oatmeal and I take that unit because like I dished it all out, mm-hmm. you know, into little containers ahead of time. So I throw my container in the microwave and push 1 minute mm-hmm. and then, you know, and then I stir it and add a little Demerara sugar and put it back in mm-hmm. the microwave for another 30 seconds. Now it's done.
Yeah. Especially and when you have ADHD.
I don't have to think about
helps.
What am I going to make? Mm-hmm. Oh my God. That's it's the ADHD piece that makes me so happy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have the same thing. Like that's why I have for breakfast. I usually have one option. If I have breakfast, I have one option because otherwise, like I can't decide.
Yeah, I need to eat, mm-hmm. and I don't need to think about it. Mm-hmm. And and I have kind of more of those moments. So sometimes it's hard. Mm-hmm. So like I do have like that's why there's always like the handful of noodle packets in the drawer upstairs. Sometimes like I will get sort of vapor locked on deciding on something and then just be like, nope, I have to, it's noodle packets, mm-hmm. you know, instead of something else. I do try to make stuff, but I'm trying to get better about planning, mm-hmm. like making a meal plan for the week. I don't think I'm ever going to get to Allison Sheridan level meal planning where it's like, Monday is fish, Tuesdays is tacos, Wednesdays mm-hmm. is hamburgers, Thursdays, like whatever it is that, like she has a whole routine mm-hmm. and like doesn't have to think about it. And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Like that's awesome. And I am in awe of that. And there will never be a point mm-hmm. in my life where I have that level of organization or productivity or capability or anything else.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, I love cooking, but if it wasn't for like, I have HelloFresh. If it wasn't for that, I would have a hard time. Like, I would either make the same thing for weeks and weeks and weeks, because yep. I said, like, I like doing that and get bored of it. Or, like, I don't know. I don't know what else I would do. I would probably, like, this is what I have been doing. Like, I would just do the same thing over and over.
Yeah. And well, and it helps. That's what I liked about being on HelloFresh was like someone else decided, like, here are your four choices. And so, like, the only part I get to decide is A, B, C, or D. Which of these is the thing I want tonight? And that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that I think it's the decision fatigue of it. And like, I can improvise in something, but I'm not very good at sort of looking at a refrigerator full of disparate ingredients and going, there's a meal here. I'll find it. You know, like, I don't feel like I'm that good at it yet.
Yeah, I can do that, but no guarantee it's going to be any good. I mean, I can cook really well, but like if I improvise, there's some go-tos, like pasta with something.
Yeah.
Always works, like pasta and then whatever you found in the fridge usually works well. But I've done a couple, like I've made some soups. I mean, they looked really awful. Like they tasted okay, but they looked like someone had pooped in the pot. Like,
I have made some very unfortunate tasting soup. Like, it looked fine, but no. And so, yeah, I totally get where you're at with that. And it's partly just the decisioning of it. I think sometimes it's hard. Yeah. So
it is.
That's part of what I like about stuff like HelloFresh, and that's part of why I want to see about a meal plan, because like, I do have that level of concentration, but not daily. I have that level of concentration like once a week, maybe once every 10, 2 weeks, maybe we can plan 2 weeks in advance. And I've sat down and done it before, and the payoff of it was really, really, really good of like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to decide these things, and we're going to go to the store and I'm going to buy stuff and do it for a week, And so like, okay, well, Monday I made this and, doing, I don't remember what it's called, like chain meals or something where like tonight we have chicken and rice. And then tomorrow it's chicken and rice soup. And then, and you sort of keep going. And then the rest of the rice, the second night goes into some, you turn the soup into stew with a bunch of extra vegetables or whatever the third night, and then turn, and keep sort of getting extra mileage out of the effort that you put in initially. And now that we have the Instant Pot and I can cook a lot of stuff, on a larger scale and do like, because that's kind of the other piece of it is that there's just two of us and, and, especially now, still like, it's not like people are coming over for dinner all the time and it's not like we're going out for dinner all the time. So, when it's just the two of us and it's not uncommon for him not to be home before what would normally be dinner time, then it sort of turns into like, well, I'm basically just cooking for me and I don't feel like making anything super nice for just me because it's just me. Like, I'll just eat noodles and I won't complain to the chef. Like, So sometimes it's also just sort of hard to find the motivation to just feed myself something. Yeah, something really good. And sometimes I do, but sometimes it's just kind of
it is hard.
I'll take something out of the freezer and put it in the microwave and move on and be fine with that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, which is totally fine. I mean, if that, like, something I've learned is to ask myself, what do I really feel like right now? Like, what do I really crave? Because that gives you an idea, like, what... And sometimes it's fine not to eat anything if you're not hungry. Like, don't have to have breakfast if you're not hungry, for example. But that's something I really had to learn. Like, it's not... It wasn't automatic.
I do have to sometimes sit down and figure out, like, what, is there something that I actually want to be eating? Or, Because, like, another thing that I want, that I have learned is that sometimes I think I'm hungry, but I'm just thirsty. Like, if I go drink a glass of water... that may be it, depending.
Yeah.
So
that, and I have sometimes, I'm not really hungry, I'm just bored.
Yes. That happens a lot too. Yeah. Like,
okay.
But we don't keep a lot of junk food around and stuff. So like, I do find sometimes it's easier that way, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean,
if I don't have a little candy dish or something to just be like, oh, I'm just going to have a piece of candy. It's fine. But
that doesn't help. I mean, I can eat like a chunk of cheese or like, I don't know, some cereal, like just, like cereal with nothing, just like
yeah,
it, there's always something.
I mean, just plain old cereal. Yeah, But sometimes, well, sometimes it's just that I don't want a whole meal. Like, mm-hmm. I just want to eat a little bit of something.
Yeah.
And so which have a little, you know, have a little bit of that and then be done, mm-hmm. you know, if that's all it is. So yeah, that's helpful too.
Yeah, that works. I have one final question. What is your favorite dish right now?
Oh, wow.
Like, if you had to, like, you didn't have to cook it, but, like, something, like, if you had to, like, you could snap a finger and it would show up. What would it be?
Wow. This is riveting podcasting, I'm sure, as I sit here and just go, wow, I don't know what I think about that.
Oh, there's so many options.
Well, and there are, like, as far as just sort of making something appear. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely a sucker for foreign treats, is mm-hmm. always what I call it. Like, I was talking about my mom traveling and I finally convinced her, like, I don't need another t-shirt from a place. Mm-hmm. Just bring me back, like, the candy. Mm-hmm. Bring me back whatever they call, like, when you see little kids where you are, like, what they're eating, what they think is treats, like, bring me that. Mm-hmm. Bring me something to eat from that place. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I finally convinced her, like, that's what I want. I want candy. Like, you know, give me something that's, like sweet and snacky, like, from there.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that, because that's going to definitely be the thing that's the most interesting to me. And so not long after I told her that, they went on a trip where they went to Turkey. Mm-hmm. So she brought me Turkish delight from mm-hmm. Turkey, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
And so I finally convinced her, and I told her, like, a bunch of times, like, this is so good. I'm so excited about it. I really loved it. It was so delicious. And I really enjoyed, like, you know, I've had Turkish delight that I've been able to purchase in the United States, and it's just not the same. So thank you. This was a super, super, super great gift. And so then that sort of, like, encouraged her to mm-hmm. like, okay, like, this is how this works now. All right. You know? And so, so now she brings me, like, a little bag of candy, like mm-hmm. different candy from different places. And so that's always really exciting. I like trying all the different stuff from mm-hmm. that, but probably it's going to be cheating, but I'm going to say Dole Whip, because they serve Dole Whip at Disneyland and they serve Dole Whip at Disney World. And I would really like to get to go to one of those places, because I haven't been in a really long time. We basically used to go to Disneyland once a year, because it's not the flight's a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used to go, like, once a year, and we would go, like, right after Thanksgiving, because everybody that came for Thanksgiving has gone back to wherever, you know, has gone back to work until Christmas. But right before Thanksgiving, they sort of do all of the Christmasing. Mm-hmm. So, like, that first week of December, like, it's all Christmased up, but nobody's there. I shouldn't tell anybody this, because this is, like, my pro tip, because then you get to see all the Christmas stuff and do all the Christmas things, but mm-hmm. you don't have to put up with all the Christmas crowds.
Yep.
So we used to have the best time. We would go, and, you know, you can, like, walk on every ride, and, like, the longest wait would be, like, 15 minutes for something mm-hmm. super popular, and you would get to go, and, you know, you can go on the Haunted Mansion, and it's all holiday themed with Nightmare Before Christmas, and you can go ride it as many times as you want, and you can ride, you know, everything, and it'll be great. And if you go mm-hmm. on Splash Mountain and you get wet, it's fine, because, yeah, it's December, but it's Southern California, so exactly. It's probably going to dry out sooner than later anyway. Yeah. So getting to do all of that stuff and have mm-hmm. it be all Christmassy and everything, mm-hmm. That's always really fun. So I would say, like, Dole Whip would be a thing that mm-hmm. I would probably say, I would like to make appear, because I have really nice memories attached to it. Cause you can only get it there. I mean, I know there's other places mm-hmm. now, like, over time, but, like, there used to only be three places in the whole world you could get it. And they were Disney World and Disneyland, and outside the Tiki Room in each of those places, mm-hmm. Disney World, Disneyland, and, like, the Dole Plantation in Hawaii. That used mm-hmm. to be, like, the only three places in the entire planet that you could get that. So it's sort of cheating, because if I make it appear here, it's not quite the same thing, but I can put on my playlist of music that they play in the background in the parks. And
yeah, like, alternatively, you can, like, just turn it around. Like, it doesn't appear, you appear where it is. So,
oh, see, then that's good. Yeah. I would very much like to enjoy mm-hmm. that with the pre-show outside of the Tiki Room mm-hmm. in California.
That's awesome. Definitely. Did not go where I thought it would go, so that's awesome. By the way, when you talked about treats from the, like, other countries, mm-hmm. I have literally gone through customs with half of my suitcase was sweets from Germany and wine. Half of it.
Yeah.
So, and it was
I definitely think my mom probably has like carry-ons or, you know, a good portion of a checked bag that's just like, you know, here's the pile of snacks that I have to take home. And she has also brought me alcohol from other countries. So like, we have a really nice bottle of absinthe from France that is very good. Amaretto, because Mr. Kelly really likes amaretto. And so when they went to Italy, she brought back like a very decent bottle of amaretto. And there was someplace else they went and she brought a bottle back from there too, because she knows that's what he likes. And my mom doesn't drink. So she's just sort of going on like the recommendation of people that are there. So, so she's like, she's just always like, I hope it's good because I, you know,
she wouldn't know.
I have no idea. I'm not who to recommend this sort of thing. So I just went with what they told me.
Yeah. No, that's how you travel. Like, don't bring back, like, I don't know, touristy knickknacks or like postcards, whatever. Bring back food and wine, like, or food and drinks in general. I mean, what you can, like, there are limits, but what you're allowed to.
But I like getting to try all the different stuff and like reading the labels and seeing what looks like, you know, an appealing label from another country. Like, it's not always a bright color. And and particularly, I think being in the United States, it's very interesting because like sweets in other places are not sweet like sweets here.
No.
Because and it's so much better. From other places. Yeah. Part of why I like it. Like, chocolate is amazing if it's not from the US. I know.
Yeah.
You know, chocolate is great, and other kinds of candies are not like hit you in the face sugary or like sweet like they're full of sugar. There's like other flavor going on, and it's interesting and they're fun to eat. So
funny story. Like I mentioned, like half of my suitcase was sweets. It was gummy bears from Germany, and you can buy them in the US, but they're not the same. And like friends of mine, they said like they're just not the same, and I'm like, okay, sure, I'll bring some. So I basically like the entire office got like each like everybody in like at least our team, which was like 10 people or 15 people, everybody got like two big bags of gummy bears from Germany. So every time, like every business trip, like it was like every like whatever 2 months or so, they got like 2 week bags of that. And I brought like some variation, like different kinds and so on, because like they're simply not the same. I don't know why, but they're not the same.
Well, I think the rest of the world doesn't believe in corn syrup the way we do here. I think that has a lot to do with it, and that and that sort of bums me out, because I feel like a lot of people miss out on, like, you miss out on a lot of other flavor if all you're worried about is it being sweet enough.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's sort of a thing that I find a lot is I don't necessarily need it to be sweet, you know, like sugary sweet, you know, so
So true.
So yeah, treats from other like gummy bears and other sort of like jelly candy sorts of things. Like those are always really tasty from other places. I like them a lot. So.
Now I know what I can bring you. All right.
Well, anything that's not from here, like that's kind of my favorite. When Charles goes and visits his family in Hawaii and comes back, like he will bring me a little bag of stuff from Hawaii too. Mm-hmm. He'll be like, okay, what do you need? You
know, good stuff.
Pineapple Crush and you know, whatever else. So
they have some really good stuff in Hawaii.
Yeah, because they have an interesting mix of like stuff that's Hawaiian and also stuff from Japan and then also like sort of the mix of the two and how some of that has sort of evolved over time.
Yeah. Yeah, not just that. I mean, a lot of Asian influence in general. Like, it's for sure a lot of Japanese, but there are also like Chinese and everything else in between.
Yeah, Chinese and Korean and other things. So
mixed in. Yeah, that makes it really interesting.
Yeah, and then how it's evolved over time, like as those influences got there and sort of became their own and things like that. So it's always so. Like he will now, because we have, you know, because we have the technology, like he will go to a shop and he'll like FaceTime me and just like point it at like the candy section and be like, okay, well, it looks good. You know, I can tell you I've had those and those are really tasty. I know this is a flavor you like, but I haven't tried them, so I can't tell you if they're any good or not. You know, things like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's very exciting. I really like that's a possibility now, that I could shop for treats from somewhere far away.
Remote.
It's really nice. Yeah.
Remote shopping. Thanks, Kelly. Thank you so much for doing this. I said, like, every episode is different. Like, you never know where it's going to go. And with you, I mean, we've done a lot of podcasts together. I've listened to, like, most of what you've done. I still didn't know where it would go because you never talk about food. So, or very rarely.
I don't. Think. Yeah.
Like, it's not a thing you do usually. So,
no. If I talk about anything, it's coffee, probably. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I have mostly. A deep inner need for caffeination. But other than that, most of the time it doesn't come up.
Okay, that's the next one. We're going to talk about coffee next time.
Yes. Yes, please. Yeah,
that's an entire episode just there.
At least one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have a recommendation for who you should invite to that conversation. Okay.
We will do that. Thanks for doing this. And tell the good people where they can find you.
You can find me most often 5 days a week. You can find me hosting the Daily Observations podcast over at macobserver.com. You can find me on The Incomparable, where I host I Want My MCU TV. And when Westworld comes back, we will bring back Greetings from the Uncanny Valley, which is a show about Westworld. You can find me talking about other things over there. I am part of the Ted Lasso Season 1 Rewatch podcast. I've done a couple episodes of that, which is called Football is Life. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that. And those are coming out once a week in the run-up to Season 2. So you can listen to those. And you can find me over there on occasionally on other things like game shows and different things there. Mike Rose and I do the After Show at aftershowpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. And Tuesday nights, you can find me over on Mac Voices Live, where I generally give Chuck Joyner a hard time. and with some other people, like, I'm not the only person over there that's like rabble rousing. Like, I have help in that regard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rest of the time you can find me on Twitter as Verso.
Awesome. I noted all of that down. And I mean, that's just like, that's just a short list of like the most important podcasts you're on. Like, there are so many. Like the After Show. I really enjoy the After Show. Like, I mean, it's an infrequent podcast, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of frequent podcasts that have like a regular schedule. And I like podcasts that just come in every now and then.
Yeah. Because we're in the midst of one of those, like, let's record this weekend, okay, and then it never happens. Mm-hmm. And then let's record. No. Yeah. And so yeah, we get those, and then you know, somebody ends up getting to go somewhere, we have a work trip, or you know, something goes wrong, and then you know, nothing works out. So
it's just life. Yeah. Like, I like that. I mean, it's good to have the podcasts that are like every week or every 2 weeks, and you know they're coming.
Yeah.
The surprise of, oh, there's a new episode of Overtired. Like, awesome. Let's listen to that.
Yeah. And then we get together and we're like, yeah, it's been a while, so now we have a bunch of stuff to talk about. And so, like, that helps sort of sustain us through the next stretch of episodes. It's like, yeah, you know, this is fun. We should keep doing it.
We should, but life.
Yeah, it happens once in a while. But yeah, and we always have a good time doing it. And I think that's the part that makes the difference, I think. Yep. Like, you know, we're not doing, like, it's not sponsored or anything. I mean, we always joke about not yet a sponsor. But we don't really, like, we're just doing it because we enjoy getting to catch up. And like, because of who we are, we're like, well, let's just make it a podcast and, you know, make that a thing that happens. And so we just do those, and it's always really fun. And I really, really like getting to talk to Mike. And I think that shows when we do our episodes, when we get together and release them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to him as well. Like, he was, like, you were both on my list for people that I wanted to have on the show. And I spaced you out a little bit, but I wanted you there because I was like, I mean, also, like, East Coast, West Coast, like,
yeah,
get some different voices in. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it also makes it harder because, I mean, he's working and he's East Coast, like, time zones, you're like West Coast. It's like, it's just life. Like, That's totally fine. I have the same problem with some other people that I want to do podcasts with, and they don't know why. Like, Jerry is in Hawaii. I'm like, 12-hour time difference. Like,
yeah,
good luck finding a time and
that's
family.
That's never gonna really. Yeah,
it does work hard sometimes, but it requires a lot of planning. And as you said, like, there's like, oh, let's do it on Saturday. Oh, maybe not.
No.
Yeah, yeah, not this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, thank you so much. And you can find me on Twitter at @casual_kitchen. I don't know why I mentioned that. I never mentioned that. I'm on mostly tech podcasts on the British Tech Network. Everything I do, all the social medias and links and so on, you can find on thepatrice.com. And you can find this very podcast on foodieflashback.com or at foodieflashback on Twitter. Not yet on Instagram. Maybe I should do that. Just remember that. Yeah, it is late here. Like, that's like, doesn't help. Anyway, thank you so much for listening and talk to you next time with whoever that will be. Not, I don't even know yet. So, surprise.
All right.
Bye.